This program is provided by lawyer Kyung Jin Kim.
You know, you usually expect technological progress to look like a marathon.
Right, yeah, like everyone's just pacing themselves.
Exactly. There are clear milestones and a finish line somewhere in the distance that everyone is running toward. You can just map it out on a whiteboard.
Sure.
But then you look at what is actually happening right now in the global tech landscape, specifically in China, and suddenly that marathon looks a lot more like a... Well, like a high-speed demolition derby.
Oh, absolutely. The whole linear progression model is completely out the window at this point. I mean, we are way past the point of expecting Moore's Law to just quietly hum along in the background.
Yeah.
What we're seeing right now is the absolute definition of high-stakes friction. The pressure cooker is sealed, and the heat is just cranked up to maximum.
Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we are looking at a landscape defined by two massive opposing forces violently colliding. On one side, you have an unprecedented breakneck domestic capital race in Chinese tech. And on the other, a tightening, almost suffocating geopolitical squeeze from the U.S.
Yeah, it's intense.
Our mission today is to unpack a dense, highly consequential briefing covering China's rapidly evolving AI, robotics, semiconductor, and telecom industries. And just to set the table for you, all the sources and the accompanying commentary for today's deep dive were provided by lawyer Kyung Jin Kim, a former lawmaker.
Right. And the material he's gathered paints a picture of a technological ecosystem that's evolving so fast, it's actually starting to warp the geopolitical reality around it.
Oh, totally.
We're talking about shifts in capital and capability that demand a complete recalibration of how you even view global tech dominance.
Okay, let's unpack this by starting where the technology actually meets you, the user, the software. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, for a long time, AI has been stuck in this hype phase.
Well, heavily in the hype phase, yeah.
A lot of flashy demos, grand promises, and just a whole lot of burning through venture capital cash.
Just setting money on fire, basically.
Exactly. But this briefing shows Chinese AI moving past the hype and becoming a massive, real-world money-making engine.
It is the crucial transition from a theoretical research project to a commercial juggernaut. And, I mean, the financial numbers attached to this transition are staggering. It proves the market is ready to pay for actual utility, not just potential.
ByteDance is the perfect example here, actually.
Yeah.
They recently restructured their AI team in a way that is honestly brilliant.
Yeah, it was a very smart move.
They took their Fishu team, which is their enterprise collaboration tool. You know, think of it like their version of Slack or Microsoft Teams.
Right, the daily workflow app.
Right. And they merged it directly with their Doubao AI chatbot team. The projected result of that merger, $4 billion in annual recurring revenue, or ARR.
$4 billion. That is massive.
It makes it the largest single AI business in China right now.
Let's look at the mechanics of why that works so well, though. Because by merging those two distinct teams, ByteDance isn't just selling an isolated AI tool that you have to actively log into separately.
Which people just forget to do.
Exactly. They are embedding the intelligence directly into the daily workflow. They reported that 90% of new Fishu clients are now buying AI products alongside it.
It makes total sense. To put it in everyday terms, it's like ByteDance is taking the company water cooler, the place where all the communication and document sharing happens, and they are bundling it with a super smart intern who just stands there taking notes, summarizing meetings, and drafting emails.
That's a great way to look at it.
I mean, if the intern is already standing by the water cooler, businesses literally can't help but adopt the AI. It's completely seamless.
And that structural integration proves AI can be a highly sustainable enterprise model. But ByteDance is just one player in a very crowded, very wealthy field right now.
Right.
Consider Moonshot AI. They just closed a $35 billion funding round, which, by the way, was heavily backed by the National AI Industry Investment Fund.
$35 billion, that's not a typo.
No, it's real capital. And they aren't stopping there. They are already entering a pre-IPO round, aiming for a $50 billion valuation.
And they are planning a Hong Kong IPO for this year. I mean, to justify those numbers, their Kimike 3 model already hit $300 million in ARR back in June. It's just printing money.
It really is.
And then you have companies like Minimax releasing their H3 omnimodal video model. We aren't just talking about text chatbots anymore. This H3 model merges text, image, audio, and video to generate these incredibly fluid 4 to 15-second 2K resolution clips.
And the kicker is it generates the native stereo sound simultaneously.
Which is wild.
Right. The omnimodal aspect is what makes that a breakthrough. It's not generating a silent video and then just pasting an audio track on top as an afterthought.
Mad dub.
Exactly. Yeah. It understands the physics of the prompt well enough to generate the sound of a glass breaking at the exact millisecond the visual shows the glass shattering.
That's incredible.
And local governments are actively pouring fuel on this commercial fire to ensure these tools actually get adopted. Like, Beijing just became the first province-level government to subsidize AI agents.
And we are talking up to 100 million RMB per project.
Yeah.
But the craziest detail buried in that Beijing subsidy is who they are actually targeting.
Yeah.
They are specifically supporting what they call one-person companies, or OPCs.
Yeah, OPCs.
Businesses run entirely by one single human being and a fleet of automated AI agents.
It forces us to completely reimagine the corporate structure. I mean, you could have a CEO whose entire marketing department, accounting firm, and customer service team are just localized instances of large language models.
Wow.
The overhead drops to near zero while the output scales exponentially.
But, and here's the reality check. You can't run a fleet of super smart AI interns, and you definitely can't generate pristine 2K video from thin air if you don't have the physical brain power to support it.
Right. Software is just math until a computer actually processes it.
Exactly. And that brings us to the actual silicon.
The physical bedrock of computing power. You need chips, and you need massive amounts of them. This is where the domestic innovation race really collides with physical constraints.
So the official narrative we often hear is that China is rapidly achieving total semiconductor self-reliance to bypass U.S. export controls.
That's the party line, yes.
And on paper, the strides are undeniably massive. Huawei is launching the Ascend 950DT chip on Huawei Cloud this August. The specs on this are just wild. He has 144 gigabytes of HBM, or high bandwidth memory, and boasts a 2.5 times performance jump over their previous 910C chip.
And we should break down why those specific specs matter, because high bandwidth memory, or HBM, is essentially the width of the highway connecting the processor to its memory.
Okay.
If you are training a massive language model, you need to push oceans of data back and forth constantly. If the highway is narrow, the processor just sits idle waiting for data.
Ready to traffic jam.
Exactly. So 144 gigabytes of HBM is a massive multi-lane superhighway.
And the briefing notes, the Ascend 950DT is hitting 2 petaflop PS on FP8 precision.
Mm-hmm.
And DeepSeek is actually a potential early adopter of this. Now, I know FLOPS are just a measure of computing speed, but help us understand what that actually means in practice.
Sure. Petaflop PS means the chip is performing a quadrillion calculations every single second.
A quadrillion. Okay.
Right. And doing it on FP8 precision is a very specific AI trick. So FP8 stands for 8-bit floating point. Basically, traditional computing demands extreme mathematical precision, like calculating PI to 50 decimal places.
Right.
Perfection. But AI neural networks don't need perfect math. They just need really good guesses really fast.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So FP8 sacrifices a tiny bit of decimal precision to achieve this blistering raw speed.
Right.
It is purpose-built for AI training.
And Huawei isn't operating in a vacuum here. China Telecom's Yurong AI platform just announced they broke 100 exaflop PS in total compute power.
Which is an insane number.
To put an exaflop into perspective, if every human on Earth performed one calculation per second, it would take us over 4 years to do what this single system does in 1 second.
Wow.
And Cambricon, which is a major Chinese AI chip maker, finally achieved its first annual profit in 2025. That's 6 years after its IPO.
And beyond just building faster hardware, the software developers are engineering brilliant ways to get more out of the chips they already have. Hmm. Look at DeepSeek releasing its V4 Flash 0731 model.
Right.
It has a massive 284 billion parameters, which is a measure of its complexity and knowledge base, but they engineered it using a technique so it only activates 13 billion parameters per token.
Okay, explain how that works, because keeping the compute cost that low seems like actual magic when you have a model that big.
Think of the AI model like a massive university with 284 billion books in its library.
Okay.
If you ask it a question about quantum physics, it doesn't need to read every single book in the library to answer you. It uses a mechanism called mixture of experts to quickly identify and wake up only the 13 billion experts relevant to your specific question.
Ah, I see.
The rest of the library stays dark, which saves massive amounts of electricity and computing power. It is a brilliant software solution to a hardware constraint.
But hold on, I have to push back on this official narrative of complete, seamless hardware self-reliance. Because lawyer Kunjin Kim's commentary highlights a major, fascinating contradiction here.
Oh, this is a great detail.
DeepSeek, the exact same company building these incredibly efficient models, actually just paused a massive $71 billion secondary funding round. Why? Because the founder was caught leaking to investors that he wanted to convert all funds to NVIDIA chips.
That detail is incredibly revealing. I mean, it exposes the intense friction between national political narratives and the ground truth reality of engineering. The official top-down narrative says, you know, the technological gap is closing, our domestic chips are fine, we are totally self-reliant.
But the engineers in the trenches, the people whose jobs actually depend on training the world's best models, they are still desperately craving that top-tier U.S. hardware.
Exactly.
It's like being told you have to win the Indy 500 in a highly modified streetcar. I mean, can you do it? Maybe, if you optimize everything perfectly. But you'd still really, really prefer the actual Formula One car if you could get your hands on it.
That is the perfect analogy. The domestic chips are getting incredibly fast, but the underlying desire for NVIDIA's ecosystem remains a powerful undercurrent.
Yeah.
Now, while this hardware battle is raging inside the data centers, the resulting AI boom isn't staying trapped behind server racks anymore. It is demanding a physical presence.
Which means we are talking about robots.
Industry insiders call this embodied intelligence. It is the moment all this software, all these exafloppies of computing power, finally gains legs and steps out into the physical world.
And the capital's flowing into the physical world just as fast as it did for software. Unitree is launching an IPO on the STAR Market this August.
Right.
They are aiming to become the first A-share humanoid robot stock, looking to raise 4.2 billion RMB, with a valuation that could reach up to 109 billion RMB.
And right alongside them, Agibot has officially started its Hong Kong IPO, targeting a valuation between $5.1 and $6.4 billion. I mean, these aren't speculative science projects anymore. These are highly capitalized manufacturing operations.
It's not just robots walking around on factory floors either. It's how these physical AI applications are staying connected to the cloud. China Mobile and Huawei are launching a premium 5G service specifically on high-speed rails.
Oh, yeah.
They are figuring out how to monetize uninterrupted, ultra-high-speed mobile AI services while you, or a commercial device, are traveling at 200 miles an hour.
But this physical expansion of AI, the robots, the infrastructure, this is exactly where the geopolitical hammer is coming down the hardest.
Oh, for sure.
Because the physical supply chain is where governments can actually intervene. The U.S. Federal Communications Commission, the FCC, just implemented an immediate outright ban on the import of new Chinese humanoid robots, quadruped robots, and power inverters. This directly targets companies like Unitree and Huawei.
Here's where it gets really interesting, though. When you look closely at the wording of this FCC ban, there is a glaring loophole. The ban only targets fully assembled robots. But China currently controls about 85% of the global humanoid robot market. Specifically, the supply chain for the guts of the machines, the sensors, the servo motors, the actuators.
And let's define those parts because they are critical. An actuator is basically the robot's muscle. It provides the physical force. A servo motor is the joint that allows for precise movement, and the sensors are the eyes and nervous system.
Right. So if I'm an American or European robotics company and I'm banned from buying a finished Unitree robot, won't I just keep importing all the Chinese muscles, joints, and eyes and then just assemble the robot locally in Texas or Berlin? The ban doesn't actually sever the underlying supply chain dependency at all.
You've hit on the exact critique the industry is raising. A ban on a fully assembled unit is a strong political statement, but it doesn't change the geographic reality of manufacturing. However, lawyer Kunjin Kim points out in the commentary that this ban still fundamentally alters global trade routes. It forces Chinese robot makers to pivot heavily away from the U.S. market and basically dump their products directly into Europe and Southeast Asia.
Which creates a massive headache for every other country caught in the crossfire.
It creates an absolute compliance minefield. Because if an international component supplier, say, a South Korean sensor manufacturer or a German servo maker sells a part to Unitree, and that robot eventually violates a U.S. trade restriction, that international supplier now faces the very real risk of secondary U.S. sanctions. You have compliance officers trying to trace every single screw and sensor across the globe just to make sure they aren't accidentally violating this complex web of geopolitical tech bans.
It is wild to think about the logistics of that. I mean, the fragmentation of the robotic supply chain feels like just one localized battle in a much, much larger tech war. And all of these aggressive moves, the bans, the IPOs, the massive chip breakthroughs, they're all leading straight toward a major diplomatic showdown.
Yes, the September 24th summit in Washington between Donald Trump and Xi Jinping. Every piece of news we've discussed today is a precursor to that meeting.
The lead up to this summit is getting incredibly aggressive on both sides. For instance, CXMT, which is a major Chinese memory chip maker, just hit a massive 3.3 trillion RMB market cap.
Right.
And almost reflexively, it triggered a U.S. Congress national security probe, and lawmakers are actively pushing back against Apple's plans to potentially buy CXMT chips for their devices.
Furthermore, the U.S. Bureau of Industry and Security, the DIS, has launched a formal investigation into Moonshot AI.
Okay, what's the allegation there?
The allegation is that Moonshot used a process called distillation to essentially copy the Fable model made by the American company Anthropic and use that copied data to train their own flagship Kimik A3 model.
I don't understand distillation for a second.
Yeah.
That's essentially using a smarter AI to train a newer AI, right?
Right, yes. Instead of gathering all the raw data from the internet yourself, you basically feed prompts into a top-tier model like Anthropic's Fable, take its highly refined answers, and use those answers to train your own model. It's like a student stealing the master's notes to skip years of studying.
But the global AI experts are already pushing back on the BIS probe, pointing out a major flaw in the timeline here.
Yes, the math doesn't really add up.
There was only a 15-day gap between Anthropic releasing Fable and Moonshot launching K3. Even with infinite computing power, stealing a model, reverse engineering it via distillation, and completely retraining your own massive flagship model in 15 days is just physically improbable.
The timeline simply doesn't support the allegation of direct theft in that specific instance. And China is not just absorbing these probes passively either.
No, of course not.
They are preparing their own countermeasures ahead of the summit. China's Commerce Department is currently considering retaliatory export controls. They are looking at restricting the export of AI model weights, limiting access to their training data, and even potentially banning local Chinese tech companies from using TSMC's overseas foundries for chip manufacturing.
Wow. Okay, before we analyze the strategy behind all this retaliation, I need to pause for a second.
Sure.
If you were listening to this and wondering who the good guy or bad guy is in this trade war, we need to step back. Our goal today isn't to take a side, and we are absolutely not endorsing the political viewpoints, the bans, or the probes of either the United States or the Chinese government.
Exactly. We are strictly, impartially reporting the contents of the briefing provided by lawyer Kung Jin Kim. We are looking at the geopolitical board and tracking where these massive pieces are moving without judgment on the policies themselves.
Exactly. So, looking at this strictly analytically, what is the strategy here? So, what does this all mean? Why the sudden flurry of bans, probes, and export threats right now?
Both nations are frantically stacking their negotiation chips on the table ahead of the September 24th summit, where U.S. Treasury Secretary Bessent will be leading negotiations focused heavily on AI safety and military use.
It's like both sides are trying to look as tall and heavily armed as possible before they walk into the room.
Oh, absolutely.
The U.S. throws down a robotics ban and a BIS probe. China counters with a $50 billion moonshot valuation, a 3.3 trillion RMB chip maker, and threats of export controls on AI weights.
It is leverage building in real time. I mean, you don't walk into a high-stakes negotiation about global AI safety without first proving that you actually hold the keys to the kingdom.
Right.
You have to demonstrate that you control the capital, the hardware supply chains, or the regulatory choke points. Otherwise, you just have no leverage.
So to bring this all together and synthesize the core commentary from lawyer Kung Jin Kim, this August is entirely defined by three massive simultaneous capital races.
Yeah.
You have Unitree dominating the A-share market, Agibot rushing into Hong Kong, and Moonshot AI pulling in staggering valuations.
And those capital races are definitive proof that AI is no longer a speculative venture. It is a commercial engine pulling the rest of the economy forward, but it is an engine currently strapped to a geopolitical powder keg.
Well said.
Both superpowers are engaging in intense, almost daily maneuvering ahead of the September summit.
Which leaves us with a final lingering thought for you to chew on today. We just talked about how global AI experts think the U.S. probe into Moonshot copying Anthropic is improbable because 15 days is simply too fast to steal, distill, and retrain a massive language model.
Right, the 15-day window.
But think about the implications of that for a second. We are living in a world where multimodal models like Minimax's H3 are launching out of nowhere, and where international espionage investigations are hinging on a mere 15-day development window.
It suggests an evolutionary velocity in the tech sector that is almost incomprehensible to the human mind, let alone a bureaucracy.
Right. So the question is the technology simply evolving too fast for any traditional diplomatic summit or any government regulation to actually control?
If the landscape fundamentally changes every 15 days, how can a treaty drafted over 6 months, debated in Congress, and implemented a year later possibly keep up with the reality on the ground?
It goes back to that high-speed rail we talked about. The demolition derby is happening, the capital's flowing, the bans are dropping, and the train is moving so fast that by the time the diplomats finally sit down at the table in Washington, they might find the finish line has already moved 100 miles down the track.
This program is provided by lawyer Kai Eun-jin Kim.
For more from the same network, follow Daily AI News from Seoul on Apple Podcasts.